This episode is made possible by purchasing resources through the Creation Science for Kids store.
Welcome to the Creation Science
for Kids
show. Praise the Lord. I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart, in the company of the upright, in the congregation. Great are the works of the Lord, studied by all who delight in them. Full of splendor and majesty is his work, and his righteousness endures forever. He has caused his wondrous works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and merciful. Psalm 111, 1-4. This is episode 10 of the podcast where we learn about Jesus, our Creator, and his amazing world. Hi, I'm Sherry Fields, your host, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Charity.
Hi.
And Joseph.
Hi.
Today we're going to learn one of the most important concepts to understand about creation, created kinds. We'll see what the Bible has to say about them and explore some of the problems early paleontologists ran into because many Christians had gotten confused about them. Then we'll hear from you about a fascinating animal, the maned wolf. It's a great episode, and I can't wait to get started. But first, I'd like to ask you for a favor. If you have an iTunes or Stitcher account, please take a minute to leave us a review. This will be great for helping people find our show and an encouragement for us. Thanks! Let's open our Bibles to Genesis 1. We're going to look at verses 11 and 12. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit, after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, an herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good. If you look further down, you'll see where God, on the fifth day, is making the sea creatures and the birds and other flying things. And he mentions after their kind and after his kind. It says it a lot. And on the sixth day, you've got the living creature after his kind, the beasts of the earth after his kind. It's all over the place in this chapter. Whatever this kind is, we kind of need to know what it is, don't we?
Yeah.
Now we're going to look somewhere else, and I'm going to read a quote that I ran into in a very interesting story. We will look at the rest of it in a bit, but this is what I want you to hear. By the 1830s, many clerics, that's pastors and priests, those kinds of men, feared geology. Extinction was deeply upsetting to those who read Genesis as requiring every species ever created to be alive still. By the early 1830s, it seemed clear reptiles once filled land, sea, and sky. As fossil discoveries undermined faith in Genesis as literal history, people across England left churches in droves. Okay, this idea is really important. Here's what was going on. This was the 1830s. People had already decided that the flood, as is recorded in Genesis, hadn't actually happened, where it covered the whole world with water and took a whole year. They had already decided that the earth had been around for millions and millions of years, and that things were always more or less the same. That idea of uniformitarianism, that you can look at what is happening today, look at the rocks and say, okay, those rocks had to have been made in the same way that we see new sedimentary rocks forming today. They had already rejected the flood, but at this point they had not yet rejected Genesis being a literal week, which is kind of weird. So they'd thrown one idea out, but kept some others, and then they were running into problems. They were finding all these fossils of dinosaurs and then the sea reptiles. And because of that, they also had this idea. Did you hear what it was it that scared them about the fossils? They believe that Genesis required what?
Every species that were ever created to still be alive.
Yes. Did they get that from the Bible? Does the Bible ever say, I will make sure every little variety of creature that I've made will survive food. No, they had not gotten it from Genesis. What they were realizing didn't match science was an idea that had become popular in the church. This is very dangerous. The people in the church who'd come up with that idea thought they were right and were thinking scientifically, but they weren't getting it straight from the Bible. They were adding on to it. This quote that I just read is on a really interesting article, biography, about a lady named Mary Anning. And she was one of the first ones. She found the very first plesiosaur. Here, let me show you on the web page. Oh, yes. And you can see the page that I ran into. I've got it linked in the show notes. But she was the first one with her brother to find an ichthyosaurus. And then later she found a plesiosaurus. Her whole family made their living collecting fossils. And she got to where eventually the geologists of her day started having to take her seriously because she knew more than anybody else did at her time about fossils. And they recognized, even though she hadn't been to their fancy schools, that she was finding out real stuff. But although she believed that God had saved her, like searching for fossils can be very dangerous. You're often looking in the sides of cliffs and things. And she knew that God had helped her to not be killed, and she found comfort in her Bible, but she realized what she was finding did not match what she had heard the Bible said. And that's where the quote was, that lots of people were realizing it didn't match up. It was just a few years later that Charles Darwin was also having trouble with what he was learning at his theological schools about God making all the species. Like, if God had to make Dalmatians and Chihuahuas and all kinds of things, and it was causing them a lot of troubles, and then he came up with the idea of evolution. And the name of that idea, that God had to make miniature roses and all those particular things at the beginning for them to exist now, has a name that you don't hear very often, but it's a pretty easy word, so I think you can learn it. It's called fixism. Just the word fix, as in to make it sure and unchangeable, and ism, which is an idea that things have to stay the way they are. There are two kinds of fixism. There's one that the land masses, the continents as we know them now, had to be the way they are now all the way back through history. And then there's the one about animals having to be the way they are now all the way back through history. There are still many people, I've run into some of them, who believe that we creationists believe in fixism. They say, you say God had to make all these species. That's clearly untrue, so then your ideas are unscientific. But that is not at all true about what we know about science, and it's also not true from what the Bible says about kinds. Okay, so let's look at what creation scientists are looking at for how God did create the plants and then the animal kinds. There is a whole new study looking at what can we see back through time that's happened to the created kinds that God made. Here's an interesting picture where it shows a cat kind, and it shows a tree branching up from that with jaguars, cheetahs, lions, and house cats all going back to one likely ancestor. That sounds a little bit like
Evolution.
Yes, it does sound like evolution. It's very confusing for people because they say, we just believe that things go back to one common ancestor. And you're saying that that's true, but here's the deal. We believe that's true only back to a certain point. Here's another picture that's, I forget which creation scientist, almost quite a while ago, came up with this idea of, instead of one tree of life like Darwin drew, where every animal and plant went back to a common ancestor, so it would have one trunk, that instead, the way God actually created is more like a creation orchard, that you have all these different, so they're all different trees, but then they have lots of branches, like especially the dogs are very, we know that they have all different varieties. So here's another picture showing the cat family, and it has, they're thinking that there might have been a separate kind for the saber-toothed cats, and then what we know of as the cats today that have survived, and that some of them would have been killed, all those varieties would have been killed by the flood, and we only know them from the fossils, but a few of them survived and then branched out in all different kinds of branches. Of course, the saber-tooths eventually went extinct. We haven't run into any of them in I don't know, a couple thousand years probably, but we've got lots of living cats that all branched off from this original ancestor. So is that anything like what people were leaving the church in the 1830s for?
No.
And are we going against the Bible by believing that cats have branched into all different kinds? No. God did not say, I'm making a cheetah, and I'm making a tiger, and I'm making a Great Dane dog, and no, God didn't do that, and he didn't need to, and we have to be very careful what we say about the Bible. There are a lot of things missing from the Bible that he gives us ideas and leaves plenty of room for us to study, but we have to be very careful not to say what we think is true is what God says, because it can cause a lot of problems for people. Oh yes, the name that modern creation scientists are giving to the study of the created kinds is baraminology. It comes from the Hebrew word baramin, which is the word that you have here in Genesis 1. The kinds are baramin. So, and then we just added on the Greek ology for the study of. So it shows that it's something different, because the secular science isn't going to study how far back you can take animals and then they stop and there is no common ancestor. Now let's look at some examples of baramins. I was given a book by Todd Elder, where he's trying to study out and classify what we know so far, because this is a subject that we don't get any help from most scientists. Only creation scientists are interested in finding these different baramin families. So he was trying to categorize what we know, so then it's easy to see what kinds of things that we need to study. What's cool is Todd Elder especially seems to like plants, because he's got a whole bunch. So I'm going to share just a sample of group so you get an idea of what we're thinking of for kinds. So here we have cone-bearing plants. These are things like
pine trees.
Yeah, so there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 that he has divided up. So you have the cycad kind. That's one where we first found it in fossils and then realized that they were living fossils. It's kind of nice. They've got some survivors. Then there's the pine kind, which could have a possible 4 subkinds. It's one of the things that's very hard to figure out. Of course, with trees, we don't have to worry about did Noah take 2 of each kind of pine tree and each kind of fir tree on board. God was in charge of making sure the plants survived. Then there's the cypress, the true cypress, and then there's the red cedar juniper, and there's the bald cypress kind, which includes the sequoias and redwoods. There's the yew trees, Y-E-W, and the ephedra kind. I wonder what ephedra looks like. Maybe I'll find a picture to put in the show notes. So you can see, this is something where we're still, it's a big area of research. I know for the Ark Encounter, they've been doing a lot of work on the kinds of animals that Noah would have needed on the Ark so they could have as good a guess as we can scientifically make of how many animals God would have brought to Noah. So this is an important area of research. It's got lots of room for lots of scientists to study, and it's a very important idea for us to understand as a church. All right. Before we go on, I have a joke for you. We talked about plants, but it's also possible that God made mushrooms on the third day. So, why is the mushroom always invited to parties?
I don't know. Why?
Why?
Because he's a fun guy.
A fun That's guy.
Now it's time to hear from you. Tell us what you have for us today, Charity.
The Maine Wolf.
Sounds good. Take it away.
The Maine Wolf lives in South America and in southeastern Brazil. It looks a little like a red fox. Maine Wolf pups have black fur all over their body, but when they become adults, they get a white-tipped tail and a white bib underneath their necks, and red fur all over their bodies, leaving a black mane. That is the reason why they are called a Maine Wolf. Maine Wolves are in danger of extinction, but some people are trying to help them. In Brazil, the cry of a maned wolf is believed to portend changes in weather. The maned wolf does not use its claws for digging, but instead uses its teeth.
The maned wolf loves to eat bananas, guavas, and sugarcane. They are carnivores. They are also mammals. They are canine. Their height is 1 meter. Their weight is 20 to 25 kilograms.
Thanks for sharing with us, Charity. The maned wolf sounds really interesting.
You're welcome. I see them at my local zoo, and my friend Galadriel did a report on them and got me interested in them.
That's awesome. Thank you, Galadriel, for the idea. Now, Charity, since we were talking about kinds today, what kind do you think the maned wolf belongs to? Would God have made maned wolves at Creation Week?
No.
Well, what would he have made?
A wolf.
A wolf or the...
Canine?
The canine kind, or wolf or dog will do. Yes. Very good. Would you like to see all the cool pictures of the things that we've talked about today? You can get our show notes with all the photos right in your email inbox by signing up for the Creation Science for Kids Club. Go to creationscience4kids.com/podcast, and there's a simple form. We just need your first name and email address, and you'll never have to worry about missing the show notes because you're busy again. And while you're at the website, you can also stop by the Creation Science for Kids store, where you can find out about DVDs like the series Incredible Creatures That Defy Evolution, where they talked about all different kinds of creatures. That would help support this podcast and the website, and it's a big encouragement to us. Some people have already bought things through my affiliate link, and I really appreciate it. Thanks so much. Do you enjoy science? Got a subject you want to learn about? Or maybe you like telling stories? If you send me a report, story, joke, or interesting idea, I might use it in a future show, like Galadriel's. Head over to creationscience4kids.com/podcast to contact me. Well, this finishes up our show for today. Until next time, have fun treasuring our amazing universe and creator. Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. Revelation 4:11.